I did not want to stop that. That was amazing. Welcome to the Herbal Intellect Show with your host, Jennifer, herbalist and owner of Senepti Botanicals. Thank you all for joining me this Saturday afternoon, January 10th, 2015. Welcome to the Herbal Intellect Show. Welcome to Nubiahood Radio. Thank you all out there for listening. We have a very, very wonderful, exciting show. I am just really, really, really excited today. It's going to be a wonderful show with great information from all different levels, spiritually, politically, medically, physically. It's going to be amazing, and I'm very, very excited today. Let's start out with our introductions, as we do every Saturday on the Herbal Intellect Show, with the happenings for Nubiahood Radio. And then we're going to get to our very special guest this afternoon, Miss Chastity, and she's going to give us all the great information that she has to share with us this afternoon. But first, let's start out with the introductions. The biggest news that's happened thus far since the last time you joined me on the show is that I'm getting married. Marcus popped the question on on Saturday, last Saturday, January 3rd. Oh, trying to do a hand clap, but it didn't work. That's okay. Very, very happy. I am ecstatic about that. I'm ecstatic about our future together and very, very happy. It's amazing to have that love. And we make this a very good team, as people have been saying. Thank you all for all the well wishes and the congrats. You know, we talk to each other like we first met each other, and we talk to each other like we've known each other for years. You know, it's amazing, and I love him so much. So
I love you too.
So anyway, so the next big thing is we're having a GoFundMe. Finally, I think every single episode that I've done has been talking about this GoFundMe. And this is what, episode 27 or something? So anyway, we're finally going to get this GoFundMe. Marcus has written a script that's going to be fun and funny and informative. So this Friday, we're going to be shooting the video for it, and we're going to hopefully get it up soon. So please support us, give a donation, support Nubiahood Radio. We are trying to get this thing off of the ground. You know, enough is enough. We are ready to make some money and spread this across the world. So hopefully you'll join us on that mission. What else we got? Oh yeah, we got two new people that are going to be joining us on Nubiahood Radio's team. We have Monique and Tay. They're going to be starting new shows this year. Monique is going to be talking about her experiences as a doula, and she's going to be bringing a new look, a new vision to Nubiahood Radio with reproductive health and women's health and pregnancy and all of that. And it's going to be great because we need that balance. And so big shout out to Miss Monique. No hand clap. Okay. And Miss Tay Queen, who has been on the show before on the Herbal Intellect Show. Miss Tay Queen, she is going to start back her conversations with the Queen and talk about health issues and metaphysical things. And of course, her wonderful crystal healing energy. She's going to bring all that to Nubiahood Radio. And so we're very thankful and glad that she accepted us as her platform to do her show on again instead of using Blog Talk Radio. Boo. I used to, yeah, anyway. So yeah, we got those new things coming up this year. So a lot of wonderful ideas and a lot of wonderful things happening on the station and in our lives. And I hope that everyone is also having, you know, a great start to their new year. Happy New Year once again. All right, so let's get into today's wonderful, wonderful show. We have a very, very special guest, Miss Chastity Unique Smith, and she is a voodoo priestess, and I'm going to read her bio, a few things from her bio, and then we're going to get into introduce her and introduce the show and get into all the great topics we want to cover today. Okay, so Miss Chastity was born in Chicago, and she that's where she lives currently. So her mother embraced the holistic health lifestyle and wellness. And so her and her brother had the privilege of learning the value of herbal remedies, which is a huge, huge plus. We need to do that more often. So big, you know, I'm great that her mother did that. So growing up, she used these holistic remedies for allergies, skin and sinus problems, and other common illnesses. So she's learned a lot about that. But then she began to dive more into natural living and how that, and she knows now how that helped her to excel as a witch. So she understands the use of herbs and how to use them in magic and other crafts. And she understands the metaphysical components of herbs and using things in cooking and potion making and bath salts, potpourri, incense, and casting spells. And she... that's what she does, and that's what she practices, and she's going to share all that today. Let's see what else. So her journey in voodoo began about 3 years ago, and so her practices now as a witch help her connect to the ancestral spirits and the ones that live in her head, and that take her to their house and that choose to possess her. I'm reading. You know, she wrote this to me, but I'm trying to read it the way that, you know, to share it with all of you. She's going to talk about voodoo in detail and answer all of your questions and all of the, you hear so much and you see a lot on TV and movies and things like that. But we're going to break it down and get rid of all these misconceptions and understand it on a different level and from someone who practices it every day and knows and learns it. And works with it. So we're very, very thankful and happy that she has brought us here or has joined us today. She is a model, a writer, a witch, and a bartender. So please give her a round of applause. Oh, is it working?
It is working.
Okay. Oh, there we go. So Miss Chastity,
welcome.
Yes, go
Thanks
right ahead.
That was a great introduction. I loved it.
Oh, that's good. Well, we're very, very happy that you joined us today. And I hope that we can continue to make a connection and have you on future shows and, you know, join you or bring you in and have you, you know, be a major part in our Nubiahood Radio. We really appreciate that. So I hope it's a long-lasting relationship.
Love that.
Great. Okay.
Great.
So you want
that too.
Okay. Would you like to start out first with telling us, you know, a little bit about your background? I mean, I mentioned a few things here, but, you know, where are you coming from in your spiritual practice?
Well, I am from Chicago. I was born and raised. I was raised in Mount Prospect, so I was raised in the suburbs. And I went to school at DePaul. My degree is still pending, so I still have some classes there. Mm-hmm. And in moving to DePaul, I lived on the north side. So, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, good. So basically, I kind of learned about being a witch within myself through my rejection of Christianity. Mm-hmm. And I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness.
Okay.
And so at a very early age, I want to say around the age of maybe 7 or 8, I started, you know, really questioning the things that I was being taught, not just to myself, but to my mother and, you know, mm-hmm. to other people. And I remember around the age 9 or 10, I started writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote the organization, you know, about some of the things that I disagreed with, you know, and some of the things that they were saying, you know, religiously.
Mm-hmm.
And so in rejecting Christianity and seeing that that wasn't right for me, I realized that I was still a spiritual person and I still wanted to serve God and I still wanted to, you know, please my creators. Mm-hmm. So I started learning about witchcraft because I felt a strong connection to that, and I always believed in magic. I always believed in the ability to, you know, use magic powers, and I've always believed in the invisible forces. So, you know, I pursued that, you know, spirituality and at a very early age, and I had to hide it from my parents growing up. Mm-hmm. But you know, that having to hide it also helped me be open about being different, and it helped me overcome a lot of anxieties that people have, especially in junior high and high school and as teenagers, about being different, but more so about being yourself. And so it gave me kind of a practice with being ostracized, you know, in a way that other people are still trying to cope with because they're coming from, you know, Christian backgrounds or coming from societies that will disapprove of them if they start to be themselves or come out about what they actually believe. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's one of the things that helped me come out about it too, was to give other people who needed a you know, a platform for their coming out.
Okay. So you kind of made your own way, or did you have a mentor or a spiritual leader, guidance, or, you know, did you find out all the information that you needed to on your own? Or a little bit of both, I guess.
I didn't have a mentor. what'd you say?
A little bit of both, maybe?
Yeah, I didn't have a mentor, but I will say that I did get a lot of spiritual assistance because I did seek out the spirits, and I sought out spirits that would assist me at an early age. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of what I had to rely on. And aside from that, it was kind of some of the books that I read, and really it was my own practices and my own experimenting with witchcraft. And in college, I didn't really, you know, I actually have some funny college stories too about one of my roommates left like a broomstick by my door as a joke and everything. I actually was able to keep a room to myself for a few years because I guess people saw that I was practicing or heard things like that. So it was kind of, in college, the people who I was friends with and hung out on an intimate way knew that I was different and knew that I was spiritual. Mm-hmm. But I would say after college and, you know, in the past 3 years and dealing with my relationship with my partner, Tian, who really helped me excel in Vodou, I think that was the time where I had more of a mentor. Mm-hmm. And through meeting my partner online, one of the things we connected through was Vodou. Mm-hmm. And seeing how advanced he was and him seeing, you know, my interest in it and me tapping into it, he was able to teach me the secrets that he knew as a practitioner. And that, by me being a witch, I was able to easily get into Vodou in a way that most people wouldn't be able to without, you know, years of practice or initiation, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's get into a little bit more deeper with terminology, and something that we also need to keep clear. That's what we try to do on Herbal Intellect. That's why the show is called Herbal Intellect, because we want to get smart and understand and learn and on a basic level that we can build and use as our tools. So let's talk about what is Vodou, and what is, you know, what is a witch? What does that word mean, and what does it mean to you, and how do you practice as a witch? And, you know, where does Vodou come from, and, you know, how is it practiced, and who practices it, and then maybe even go into the differences between, you know, Vodou and Vodun, Ifa, and those types of practices as well. And real quick, the chat room is open. If you if you have any questions or comments, please go to NubiaHoodRadio.com and click on Listen Now and go ahead and put in your questions there. You can log in. And then also our phone lines are open at 323-815-8729. That's 323-815-8729. So, Ms. Chastity?
Okay. Well, I'm going to start with your first question, which was, what is a witch? I think that's a good place to start.
Okay.
I give the definition, by definition, if you look it up or if you look throughout history, a witch is typically a female of exceptional charm, exceptional beauty, exceptional grace, exceptional feminine power, that can be enchanting almost. In history, women were labeled as witches, and this is talking about in European history during the Salem witch trials, when women were labeled as witches because they were beautiful or because they had a little bit too much knowledge of herbs or were able to cook too well and things like that. Now, I do want to mention that does go back to my Vodou head, which is Oksum. I call her Oksum Yalorde. That's not what everyone calls her. There are different languages, and we'll talk about that when we talk about the different terms of Vodou.
Okay.
But the Orisha, the spirit of the river, known as Oshun or Oksum or Osun, she is the Orisha who would be considered a witch in terms of the feminine principles and the mastery of feminine principles that she has and that she earned when she herself was a human. She was one of the humans who earned her way to Orisha status. And so she was the first human witch. And so even in ancient African times, before the genetic mutation of Europeans and before European colonization, there was women, who had exceptional charm, beauty, grace, and exceptional abilities. So it is important to understand that a witch is a woman who, let's look at the term witchcraft. Witchcraft is the art of being a witch. So a witch would be a woman who is crafted or understands the art of femininity or, connection to the elements, and sensuality.
Okay.
So I would say that would be a basic term. In terms of, knowing whether you're not a witch, I think most witches will embrace the term witch as opposed to fear it. A lot of times some people might pose the question of, how do you know if you're a witch or not? I would say if you're a witch if you are not afraid to call yourself a witch. I think that, because there's a strong power to that term, and it's very feared, but it does hold a lot of power. And it holds a lot of esoteric power. And all witches are not women. There are men witches, but there's a lot of debate about the feminine aspect of being a witch. Me, as Black High Priestess, I will tell people that a man can be a witch, but being a witch does have a connotation of balance and femininity. So I think if a man is a man of mysticism or mystical powers, he should determine whether or not how aligned he is with feminine principle before he calls himself a witch, as opposed to a wizard or a mage or a warlock. That's something to note.
Okay.
So,
right.
And what was some of the other questions?
Well,
I kind of got lost myself.
No, that's fine. No, that's great information. So what can we talk like a minute? Yeah, go ahead.
No. What were you going to say?
Well, just a minute on Oshun and how you said that she is considered a witch. So what, I guess because she has that exceptional charm and exceptional beauty, like I've from my experiences with her energy, is that her beauty is just unmatched, and, her acceptance of her body and, that love and sensuality that she exudes, that's her energy. So is that kind of what you mean by being a witch as well? Or has
absolutely
components
now,
in it?
In terms of Oshun, what I mentioned is something that I don't really want to get too deep into, because it's knowledge that is kind of it's knowledge that Oshun bestows upon people that she's led into her house. Okay. So when I refer to Oshun, I will re-mention that, you know, it came to me that Oshun was the first human witch.
Okay, okay.
And you know, some people may know different paths of Oshun. And there is a, you know, and some might understand that Oshun was a human at one point. Not all of our ancestors were human mm-hmm. before. Mm-hmm. Some of them were purely forces of nature that are still forces of nature. Some of them were humans, and you know, and there's different paths and different traditions.
Okay.
So,
well, yeah.
Oshun was,
oh, go ahead.
She was a witch.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So in terms of the energy, and in terms of me and my Vodou practices, how I relate to Oshun is through my personal Vodou initiations and understanding that I was already practicing witchcraft and understanding the Ashe of Oshun, which is that of sensuality, beauty, prosperity, love, those type of things. Understanding that I already embodied those principles naturally, it helped me get further into my Vodou initiations through her choosing to take me into her house and teach me Vodou witchcraft.
Okay.
And in that way, I relate what I do as witchcraft, because it's important to understand, getting into Vodou now, it's important to understand that not all priests and priestess of Vodou are witches.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know.
Okay.
Some may be a priest or a priestess of Vodou, but they might not do witchcraft. And some know witchcraft, and that's kind of getting into what Vodou is and what Vodou isn't, which I think was your next question. But I'll let you
right. No,
ask
go ahead.
Just
yeah.
In case you had another one.
Right. Well, I guess we
okay.
Real quickly, if we can go through what you know, Vodou, Vodun, Ifa, maybe even Hoodoo and Santeria. Obe, I'm not sure if that's I'm pronouncing that correctly or not, but you know, all those different things, how are they related, how are they different, you know, and then we can definitely jump right into to the traditional herbs that are being used, and we're going to talk about marijuana, finally, on the Herbal Intellect Show.
All right,
but yeah,
good.
Just real quick, go
okay,
through those,
so,
and then we'll...
So real quick, what boat, and for some listening, they know I did the intro to African spirituality and Vodou on another internet radio show, and so I want to touch a little bit on what I said there, which is what Vodou is and what it is not.
Okay.
And Vodou is practiced as a religion in the sense that the reverence for the forces of nature, the ancestral reverence, and the ceremonies that are dedicated to the spirits and to continuing the tradition, those are religious aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
But Vodou is a left-hand path of metaphysics. And for those who are into the occult, more so than Vodou, the difference between the left-hand path and the right-hand path has a lot to do with individuality as opposed to group collective consciousness. So religion itself falls under the right-hand path, which deals with more of a collective consciousness, more of conforming to that form of values in order to reach a spirituality. The left-hand path deals with the chaos of the freedom of individual will. So that chaos is where individual choice comes from, and that's where the solitary mage can employ their particular ashe or their particular powers of witchcraft or whatever bow that they practice in to help cope with the chaos of the world or to help them create their own reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's outside of the confines of a religion where you have to conform to the group set of values in order to achieve your divinity. The left-hand path allows the individual to achieve their divinity through their own rites.
Okay.
Of rites of passage.
Mm-hmm.
So with Vodou being practiced as a religion, but it is in fact a spirituality, which means it religion kind of puts a middleman between the practitioner and the divinity.
Mm-hmm.
And Vodou is a spirituality, which means the practitioner does not need a middleman to initiate them between them and their ancestors, because Vodou is a bloodline trait, and so it is only successfully practiced and conjured by those who are of the ancestral bloodline of the Vodou spirits, which are the most ancient spirits to humanity, mm-hmm. which means the Black African spirit. Mm-hmm. So people who are not deeply connected to ancient African humanity, or people who quite frankly are genetically are not of African ancestry, which getting into Neanderthals and the genetic mutations that did not start as humans. Mm-hmm. It's important to understand that Africans were always humans, but mm-hmm. recessive genetics mutated, and their ancestors started as like ape-like, you know, in so to speak, in terms of that type of evolution. So Vodou is the most ancient spirituality of the original human, mm. and that spirituality originates from the cosmos, typically from Sirius B, but that is not the only star system or cosmos that Black ancestors necessarily come from, mm-hmm. but it's important to understand that it's an ancestry from the cosmos that was passed on to the humans that first inhabited this planet. So people who practice the religious aspect of Vodou, they are still doing, you know, the African spirituality, but I do like to make a point to let people know that Vodou is not Christianity. It is practiced like Christianity because the slaves were deeply oppressed from Vodou, because Vodou was what helped the slaves successfully revolt against the evil that was happening to them at the hands of the Europeans. And when mm-hmm. the Europeans realized that this spirituality was so successful, that is what they attacked. And to this day, Black people are still enslaved. Mm-hmm. To Europeans, because they won't even call on their own ancestors because mm-hmm. they're afraid of it.
Right.
And so it's that reason that Vodou is practiced as a religion, because white people still want to put a middleman between the African person and their divinity. Mm. And if Black people started understanding that the ancestors of Vodou are their actual gods, they will no longer feel the need to go through white people or go through whiteness or lightness mm-hmm. or white supremacy to achieve power or divinity or holiness. And if anyone who has tapped into Vodou or has practiced Vodou or has gotten a glimpse of it will know that all of the ancestors, even the ones that some people try and claim are white or mixed or other of other origin, all of them incarnate as triple darkness. Mm-hmm. So if anyone has had an experience with an Orisha incarnating and them seeing a visual or an incarnation of them, they know that their skin will always, if they appear to have skin or whatever, it's going to be triple black.
Mm.
And that's why it's very important to understand that these are cosmic ancestors mm-hmm. of African humans. And that's who practices Vodou, people who are of the bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I want to make is, in ancient Africa, every tribe did not practice the same. Some tribes might have had a certain Oduduwa or a certain spirit over their tribe, and every person didn't have the same role. So while ancient Africa was deeply spiritual, and indigenous Americas and indigenous humans were deeply spiritual, every person didn't have the role of a priest or a priestess in that tribe.
Mm-hmm.
So when I talk about the bloodline trait of it, it goes back to what the definition of a witch is. These are things that are traits that you have, just like you have the trait of black hair or the trait of, you know, a broad nose mm-hmm. or the trait of being short or tall. You have the spiritual trait that we have. And Vodou is a spiritual bloodline trait that people of that genetic heritage can access. So
okay, wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great.
It is important to understand those things, because a lot of people are trying to pay for mm-hmm. Vodou initiation,
mm-hmm.
and
oh, yeah.
the difference between paying a priest or a priestess for a service that they can perform through their initiation,
mm-hmm.
that's paying a person for a service. You should do that. As a matter of fact, anytime you petition the ancestors, you should always have an offering.
Mm-hmm.
And priests know that. But for those who are not initiated, or for those who are not of the bloodline, paying a priest or priestess is proper. But to try to pay
for your own,
to be initiated,
yeah.
That's getting into the idea of being able to pay for spirituality, just like the idea of being able to pay for certification. And that's why people are practicing it as a religion, because they're trying to pay for certification the way you pay to become, you know, an instructor or something.
Right.
Yeah, and these people cannot instruct a person. The only the only thing that can really initiate you is the spirits themselves. And the spirits want to work, they will. And if they want to bring someone to work, you know, to help you reach Vodou, they will. You should not, you don't have to pay money to
to awaken. You shouldn't have to pay for your own awakening. You know, that's something you personally do. It will help you and coach you, but that's something you got to do yourself. Yeah, and with the help of the ancestors. So that kind of brings us into, well, we will definitely need to get to the herbs, but real quick, I'm just going to say that there's a lot of white people who are becoming priestesses and priests in the Ifa, I guess you would call it religion or a practice. And I guess that what you just hold, everything you just said was kind of the reason why they would never ever be able to completely understand, overstand that that practice. And so, if you know, following that lead is not really suggested, I would assume. But yeah, anyway, okay. So let's talk about
talk about that since you mentioned it. Because one of the differences between some of the traditions is the Haitian Vodou tradition and the Ifa, which is Yoruban of Nigeria, Vodou tradition. One main difference that I've noticed is that the Haitian Vodou traditions that are practiced in New Orleans or on the islands or, you know, in Black American society of New Orleans and that the Haitian tradition has more experience using Vodou against white supremacy and against slave masters. And that's not to say, and this is to note that, again, the African slaves came from Africa. They came from the West Coast of Africa. So the Vodou that they're practicing is that deep Nigerian, Benin, Congo Vodou. That, it came from there. But the tradition in which they're practicing, let's say Petro, which means the fire, you know, or the fire tradition or the fire invocations, so to speak, the Petro was practiced, and that was what helped the Africans revolt. That's why you have Haiti now, because they were the slaves that got away. That's why they've sanctioned Haiti, because the Haitians used Vodou. And again, for all these Black Americans who are trying to figure out how to unite against an enemy, it was Vodou that helped the African slaves who did not speak the same language, did not have the same cultures, didn't even call the gods the same. It was Vodou that helped them come together and unite, but also come together and do the agriculture and the community things that they had to do after they were freed slaves. A lot of Black Americans right now do not want freedom. They just want the privileges that white people have, because freedom is one of the most terrifying things to Black Americans. Black Americans do not really want the responsibility that freedom entails.
Exactly.
And Vodou will help Black Americans get into that power as an individual and understand how to be free without a revolution.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely it should be a spiritual war, not any type of physical war between people. You know, it's more of a spiritual war. That's what we've been saying on Nubihood Radio, on Philip's show, Marcus's show. You know, we ask the question, what do we need to do? Do we need to meditate? Do we need to fight? Do we need to, you know, split off? Or do we need to go to a spiritual realm and fight on that realm? And I think that's really maybe the answer. I don't know, but I don't have all the answers, but that's something to think about too. It's, you know, how can we actually really get, you know, get true freedom? But let's go ahead to the herbs, okay? So I know you have done your research, and you're going to talk about marijuana. And if you want to start with marijuana, or do you want to start with talking about the herbs that you use on a daily basis with your rituals? Or we can also go into you know, how, well, with the marijuana, I know you're going to go into the relationship between the Native Americans and how they use peyote and mezcalito. So go into a little bit of that, you know, start wherever you please, but let's go ahead and get that in for today as well.
Okay, cool. Well, just for the sake of the show and the herbs and everything, I do want to mention that growing up, you know, I used to go to Michigan a lot. My mom, she got really close to a couple in the Kingdom Hall, which is what Jehovah's Witnesses go to instead of church. They call it the Kingdom Hall. And so there was a couple in the Kingdom Hall who became my grandparents. And, you know, we grew up with them, and we lived with them during high school at a time, too. And so what they had a summer home in Michigan, and we would go to Michigan every summer. And that's kind of where I think I kind of started learning witchcraft subconsciously, even though even though they were all Jehovah's Witnesses. Because what we did in Michigan was we would go out and by the cottage and pick some herbs and things, because my brother had terrible, terrible allergies. And when we were older, he couldn't even sleep inside the cottage because, you know, mold would happen over, you know, because we only went in the summer. And so some of the things that grew there in Michigan was the strawberry leaves, and there was mint leaves, and those grew outside the cottage, and we would actually use the strawberry plant leaves and the mint leaves and make tea out of it, and use that tea to help my brother with his allergies. My brother has allergies, sinus allergies. I have skin allergies, and so I would get, like, eczema inflammations and things like that. And so one of the other things that, you know, grows in the Americas that I wanted to mention was black walnut. That's something I had to take. I took that in terms of different ways to use herbs and marijuana, too, is I took black walnut through capsules and vitamins. And that helped me with parasites and things like that. Because we would get muscle tested. We grew up doing muscle tests and finding natural remedies and everything. So on my muscle testing, parasites and a lot would come up, and that would explain my sugar cravings and craving for sweets and things like that. So those were some of the, you know, those are some of the herbs I grew up in. Things like echinacea, golden seal, eye bright. Those are all things that help with sinuses and stuff that I got introduced to at a young age that are indigenous to North America.
Right.
Now, getting into marijuana, like we were talking about, the reason that it's such a spiritual herb is because of the properties that it has that can translate from physical health to spiritual health. And so when I mentioned some of those other things, like, you know, the mint and the strawberry leaves and, you know, like echinacea and golden seal, the properties of that are things that can help with sinus relief. And so when you drink it or when you take it, it clears your sinuses. So in witchcraft, you do sympathetic magic, you are taking the properties of a natural herb or remedy or natural element, and you're applying it to the spirit realm through sympathetic magic. So something about weed is that it has so many healing properties.
It helps everything.
People who are epileptic. Basically, I mean, I don't even want to start getting into it because there's so many.
So many.
But, It's the all-healing plant. It's something that indigenous people used every day, not only to access spirituality, but just to maintain health. And one thing I want to tell all the callers to do, and I'm going to remind everyone at the end of the show if I have time, do your own surveys, because I've done this before. Talk to your friends, talk to your peers, talk to strangers. Ask people if they, you know, take marijuana, you know, medically, or if they smoke it or whatever, if they use it regularly, ask them when's the last time they got sick, ask them if they have cancer, and don't just ask, you know, ask people who have been using for a long time, and ask people who have not smoked or who have never smoked or never used weed, and ask people who are in their 40s and 50s, and do your own surveys and find out if a person who is considered a pothead, how many ailments that they've had. And ask a person who has not used weed but uses other remedies and pills and things that the doctor prescribes. And do your own research and find out how many people that use marijuana in their life have gotten cancer. And another thing I want people to do, I want them to do their own research. I've done it already. But I want people to ask people who have gotten a flu vaccine in the past 5 years how many times they've gotten sick in the past 5 years. And I want people to ask people who have not gotten a flu vaccine in the past 5 years if they have gotten the flu in the past 5 years. So that's a side note. So by marijuana having all these natural healing properties, indigenous people understood that and used it. And in one of the links there, you can go through the timeline and see that some of the priests and priestesses of some of these ancient traditions were the ones who introduced the marijuana or the cannabis, I should say, to, you know, other tribes and other regions. Mm-hmm. Because they, as spiritualists, were using it in a spiritual way and knew the healing properties of it, and, you know, that can translate medically. So aside from that, this is going to get a little metaphysical here, but in my brief research, I thought, I can go for it? Okay.
Yes.
I found that the origins of cannabis are typically known to be in Asia, and maybe more specifically, possibly the Himalayas, where, you know, it might have had its actual origin.
Mm-hmm.
And personally, I question that. But let's just say that has some truth to it. Because I believe that there's different strands, you know, that probably grew in different regions of the world.
Definitely.
But by cannabis, the cannabis plant coming from that region, for those who understand more of a Native American traditions of metaphysics, they understand that the cultural genetics are related to the different elements. And that's dealing with the four major elements, earth, air, fire, and water. And earth, air, fire, and water are the basic components that you need to understand in order to do witchcraft in an alchemical way, which is blending elements and making formulas or, you know, making spells. So Asians are related to the element of air. Native Americans, North and South America, are related to the element of earth. Africans are related to the element of water. And Caucasians are related to the element of fire. So when I was looking, you know, when I was doing the research about the origins of it and understanding that Kush is a form of cannabis that it has more African origins, but understanding cannabis coming from the Orient or coming from Asia and relating to the element of air, that's the best way that I can, from as a priestess and a metaphysical standpoint, explain why marijuana is such a spiritual plant, because the monks, you know, and the Tibetan monks, you know what I'm saying, who are on the mountains and live in the mountains, they're the closest to heaven or the closest to that spiritual aspect. You know, earth grounds to the physical realm, and air gets you higher to spirituality. And so by Asians being of the element of air, which is the, you know, a very spiritual element, and marijuana coming from that region, it understands that it has the spiritual connotation of being high, which means being high spiritually, because that's the element that it actually comes from in the region of the world where spiritual centers are. So, the airy context.
Even the fact that you're smoking it, I mean, that's how we intake air in any way. So you're smoking it putting it into your lungs, and as well, it has a very, you know, there's a very thin separation between, you know, your nasal passages and your brain. So that little, you know, it's able to very quickly go into your brain and have that psychoactive activity, but it is being smoked as well. So it's an air transmission as well to actually take it. Most people take it that way. So,
And the act of smoking, getting into indigenous traditions,
mm-hmm.
smoking is huge in Native America. Smoking is huge
right.
in Africa. And I'm talking in a spiritual context.
Okay.
And I'm talking in an indigenous context. And that's because the act of smoking is in taking fire.
Mm.
And so when you do a ritual from a Native American or more witchcraft perspective, smoking would be a combination of the elements of air and fire, and it would be a way of ingesting fire into yourself and connecting to fire
mm.
for a spiritual purpose. So if we're talking about different ways that, for those people who were curious about different ways that you can use marijuana, it's becoming legal now,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of some of these strands that are becoming legalized are breeding the potent THC out of it to appease the people
yeah,
regulating FDA,
right.
you mm-hmm. know, the
DEA, FDA, whatever, yeah.
So, you can eat it. You can, you know, make a butter out of it or, you know, mix it, you know, with other herbs that you have, like, you know, like you may have oregano or Italian seasoning. You can
mm.
you can use it like that to an extent. You don't necessarily have to only use the flower part. Another thing about and tea is a great way for people who are a little uneasy about the idea of smoking, because
mm-hmm.
some people are sensitive to smoke
mm-hmm.
for, you know,
mm-hmm.
for justified reasons. Tea is a great way to get around that. But I do want to note that smoking marijuana without tobacco products. So I'm talking to these people. I'm talking to you guys who smoke your blunt. Not healthy.
Hmm.
Stop.
Mm-hmm.
Stop it right now. Because you're defeating the health properties of the marijuana. But still, people who smoke blunts still don't get cancer.
Right,
and I'm
it's
telling
powerful
you,
enough.
Do your own research, Colin. Yeah, it is still powerful enough. And remember, the tobacco leaves, you know, that were being used or, you know, that are used in more indigenous cultures don't have the same properties that the drug companies or the big pharmaceutical or, you know, the tobacco and drug alcohol companies are putting into these things to make them addictive.
Mm-hmm.
So you got, you got people, stereotype Jamaicans as using the, you know, the big leaves or the backwoods and things like that. That's the more indigenous way of smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, pipes were very popular. Pipes were a craft,
mm-hmm.
you know,
Definitely.
That came from, you know, Africa and Native America. And those pipes were instruments of spirituality that
mm.
were used to smoke.
Yes,
so
please.
This is a spiritual tradition, so I really, because I don't know how much time we have, I'm kind of going to fast forward a little bit to the oppression of indigenous spirituality that we're talking about.
Right.
Real
quick, just
all these,
the part about your, you know, using the pipe as a craft and how that is a spiritual entity in itself, the actual pipe. If you haven't already, go to the teachings of Don Juan, get that book. It tells you all about that. And how, Don Juan uses that pipe. You know, he has, his mentee, use the pipe, and how, you know, the black smoke takes him, and it's a whole beautiful, I don't even know what to call it, but just read the book and you'll learn about that.
Yeah.
And that is definitely true, that pipe is very important in a lot of the Native American traditions of smoking, and what they use, mezcalito. But definitely that is very, very true. Thank you for bringing that up and talking about that too. But yes,
yeah.
Go ahead. And
because these are,
mm-hmm.
oh yeah, well, you know, they're spiritual instruments that confirm the lifestyle and the civilized connection that indigenous humanity had with the spirit realm
mm-hmm.
prior to the recessive genetic conquering. So the political things I wanted to mention about marijuana as a spiritual plant is the global oppression that we're dealing with, that indigenous humans are dealing with,
mm-hmm.
and darker you are, the more oppressed you get, and we understand that comes from mulatto imperialism, that comes
mm-hmm.
from the fact
mm-hmm.
that every indigenous place was conquered by recessive genetics, and whoever the mulatto class of that place was, meaning whoever mixed with the the conquerors and had lighter skin or had more of an acceptable phenotype, those are the people who remain richer in society and more privileged. In any society you go in around the globe, anyone who's darker is in the underprivileged position.
Yep.
That's mulatto imperialism. So what I want to discuss that to talk about the politics of the legalizing marijuana in order to oppress indigenous humanity.
Mm.
And if we're talking about Native Americans, I don't have to remind everyone what happened to Native Americans. I'm Cherokee, by the way, for anyone who
wondering
how connected I am to mm-hmm. what happened to my ancestors in Africa and in Native America. So the term marijuana comes from, I don't want to say Spanish, but I understand it to be Spanish,
right.
but it
could
be a mix between Spanish and the indigenous language
mm-hmm.
of South America.
Mm-hmm.
And so the legalization of marijuana actually was that term. It was an attack on the cultural immigration.
Exactly.
And for South Americans who practice Vodou, Vodou is widely practiced in South America more than North America, and South Americans have more of a connection to their African roots in that religious sense, whereas in North America, the only place Vodou was really practiced religiously was in Louisiana, so to speak. So it's important to remember that South Americans are Africans. That's why you have Santeria, that's why you have Voodoo, Bujini, all these other things that were conquered, these other heritages that were conquered by Latins or by Spaniards.
Mm-hmm.
So with the immigration, you know, in the early 1900s, it was an attack on South Americans, and is an attack on indigenous cultures, and the stereotypes of marijuana came from the political attacks on indigenous cultures, where they would stereotype natives or jazz musicians or West Indies, like Rastafaris and things like that, as smoking and things like that. But again, it was a misunderstanding,
mm.
or more so a hatred of the spiritual trait that indigenous humanity had that,
right.
is different to Caucasians, it's something different and something to understand.
Right.
For people who understand the history of it, it's okay to get angry.
Mm-hmm.
But just as a preface, I want people to understand how it's different and why genetic tendencies, play their role in these interactions.
Right.
And so the tendency to oppress, came through oppressing, just like Vodou was oppressed as a spiritual trait of the Africans who were slaves. They wanted to impress anything that created a spirituality and a remembrance of who you were. Because to keep slavery going after abolishment, you have to manipulate people
mm-hmm.
into still working for a system instead of going back to their traditional ways.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the ways you do that are convincing a person that, the American system is better. So I really wanted to get into the drug test and how drug testing is another way that, illegalizing marijuana is a direct attack on indigenous humans,
mm-hmm.
a direct attack on black Americans or brown Americans of mm-hmm. aboriginal descent.
We still have about 10 minutes left, so we're good, but or longer. I mean, Marcus is saying, go ahead, we're good. 30 minutes, okay, we got about 30 minutes left, so if you any more information, we're going to continue this. This is such a wonderful conversation. We really, really appreciate getting this information out there to people. It's really invaluable. Real quick, this documentary that we play on Nubihood Radio called The True History of Marijuana, or Marijuana, it talks about that, about the name marijuana and how it was first called, let me get off the chat room real quick. Well, okay. We just filled up in the chat room, so maybe one of us can log off so other people can come on. But anyway, so they talk about how for a long time marijuana wasn't called marijuana, it was called cannabis, and they used it for so many different things, like the oil was used in energy, the plant hemp was used in clothing, you can eat it, you can use it for powering different things. It is like one of the strongest, as a hemp rope, it's like one of the strongest materials out there. And it was used in a lot of different things, but socially and politically, the people who were hungry, the power elite, they were hungry for their coal and natural, not natural gas, what is it? Oil. And they were wanting to replace the use of hemp in many different things. So they basically wanted to, demoralize marijuana or cannabis and consider make people change their minds about it and make it considered something that is not good, something that's evil, something that's strange, something that is harmful. And so they did a lot of propaganda on, you know, commercials in the 60s about how, you know, people that smoke marijuana or, well, first they changed the name to marijuana. So that sounds, you know, the spelling of it looks Mexican, you know, people, like you said, that are darker, were always, you know, discriminated against anyway. So anything that looks like them or has a connotation to being Mexican, being dark, being ethnic, people were scared of that. White people were scared of that. And so changing that name to marijuana made it sound like something bad. And so that, In addition
made it
to
sound like something that was a threat to American
yes,
culture,
exactly.
That's what black people are. That's what brown people are.
We're right.
A threat to American culture. If we're anything other than slaves,
exactly.
And convincing people, you know, of that, taking away their actually marijuana is. Cannabis is considered to be what caused civilization in a lot of history.
Mm-hmm.
The trade of it and the use of it is considered to be the founder of civilization. Now, we know that Africans were civilized and had our kingdoms far before that.
Right.
But it is good to note for modern, meaning Europeans or recessive genetics mutated approximately 2,000 to 7,000 years ago. So when you put 2014 or 2015 on your date, that's because you're going off of the mm-hmm. European,
the Gregorian calendar.
The mutation started, not mm-hmm. when civilization started, but when the genetic mutation and conquering started. You know, and mm-hmm. and so in that time period, I can see how it's considered to have civilized. Those who did not have civilization
right.
in their genetics.
And they did so much propaganda. They had commercials out with people, you know, these white guys smoking cannabis, and then, you know, they end up tearing up stuff or just acting like monkeys, really. And that's what they showed on TV, to scare people, to make it look like it was something that, you know, wasn't good for society. And so they turned it around to, you know, to what it is now. And so we have a caller coming in. Okay. We have a caller with a question or a comment, so give us 1 second. Caller, are you there? No, not yet. Okay. Well, you want to continue on, Ms. Chastity, then we'll get the caller on there.
Yeah, like you said, drug tests,
yes.
For anything like cocaine or uppers, downers, heroin, mm-hmm. all of those things, the standard drug test is a urine test. And so if you go to get a job and you get drug tested, if you did cocaine at a party, two, three days later, you could take a drug test and get a job.
Mm.
Marijuana is the only one that takes up to a month to for you to piss clean.
Right.
So when you look at that and you look at how many people smoke and are maintaining health through smoking, because even I put a link there that proves that test scores in marijuana users are higher.
Mm.
There's
mm-hmm.
a lot of misconceptions. I got the link there. So
okay.
The idea of a person not being capable of something, intellectual because they smoke is actually quite opposite. The spiritual channels that marijuana opens up allows a person to have higher intellect.
Exactly.
And if you talk to a person who smokes as opposed to a person who doesn't, you will definitely see the difference in a person's spiritual intellect and their ability to think
mm-hmm.
for themselves and to think in general, which
mm-hmm.
is there the caller there yet?
Yes, I think he's on or she's on. Okay. So, caller, let's get your comment or question.
You will.
Give us 1 second.
Hello?
Yes. Oh, great. Yes, we can hear you now. Caller, can you state your name or the name that you like to go by and give us your question?
Yeah, my name is Shagun Dent, a.k.a. Mr. Dent.
Peace.
Want to give a shout out to Nubia Hood Radio and Chastity.
Oh, thank you.
It was good. It was good.
You liar. You said you weren't going to be able to call in. You said it was
positive. I know it was on Pacific time, so yeah, I'm here now.
Okay.
I do have a question, though.
I still got $20 for you, too, for your album. Listen to this man's music, listeners. Listen to Shagun Dent's music. He's got this great song called Ignorance that I just can't stop bumping. It's really funny.
It's called Ignorance. Okay.
I should have told you to play that one.
Oh, yeah. We'll play it. Well, if we can get it up, we'll play it at the end, then.
All right. Thank you.
Go ahead.
But you know, I'm actually trying to learn, getting to more of the spirituality thing. You know, I wanted to kind of get into shamanism. You know, what's the difference between that and, you know, Wiccan and witch? And, you know, how do you, like, what would be some of the methods to learn that and kind of apply that practice?
Okay, shamanism, I would call shamanism a mode or a modality of spirituality and ancient spirituality. Now, in terms of Vodou, shamanism is a mode of Vodou, just like witchcraft is a way of practicing Vodou. But it's more so, shamanism is more dealing with channeling.
Channeling okay.
spirits or it's you know, maybe shifting the spiritual consciousness from one body to another. And so it's an aspect, because in Vodou you do have spiritual possession. You do have people who get in trance or who go into possession and receive messages, or who go into possession and become the incarnation of the Orisha. So shamanism is similar to that, but it can be an aspect of Vodou. But shamanism is more talking about Indian in the sense of Indian in the sense of Asian, and Indian in the sense of Native American. That term would kind of more encompass those traditions of that practice, but it is an aspect in terms of the spiritual possession.
Isn't shaman, isn't there also an African version of it as well, right? Because there is a book that I love, love, love. I love this book. It's called Zulu Shaman by Credo Mutwa. And I'm going to post him, but there is another more African aspect of being a shaman or shamanism. And it has more to do with like being able to see the future as well, being a prophet and things like that, too. But definitely, yeah, you're on point. I'm going to post that right now. It's a great, great book. Yeah. Awesome.
It's a form of spiritual divination, which can happen in any tradition. So what about shamanism is drawing you as opposed to any other mode, do you think?
You know, I mean, just a little backstory. As you know, as growing up, and you ever see me perform, like people say, you know, I kind of go into these little trances and break into these crazy voices. And, you know, and I can just kind of, like on a whim, especially if I'm under the influence of marijuana, I can just break into like a spot-on impersonation of an artist. No, I mean, not to the point where I'm just doing their voice, to the point where I'm actually like, for instance, like I can do Nas, and I can freestyle a song that Nas would actually write, like right on the point, you know, and different people I meet, different, you know, and just random things just kind of manifest through me sometimes. Yeah, you know, it's kind of one of those things that I really can't explain.
Okay. Is it more specific, do you think, to artists that you know, or do you also feel like animal spirits coming through? Do you ever feel like you can imitate an animal? You do?
Yeah, like, you know, people, back when I, you know, they always, people used to, growing up, I used to always be called crazy, because I would, like, you know, sometimes I walk around like a, just break out and just start walking around like a cat or like a, start doing these crazy noises in school, you know, and they kick me out of school and say, put me in like the, the special classes because I was always blurting out these weird parrot noises and stuff like that.
Wow.
You know, so a little.
It sounds like you're tapping into the some of the spiritual aspects of marijuana, and it sounds like it helped you get into some of the traits, your spiritual traits in your bloodline. By you already being a musician and a lyricist, you're tapping into some griots that might be through your bloodline, or some historical griots or ancestors that were griots that choose to work through you because you might have already cultivated that griot energy, you know, and that ability to channel that. But it sounds like you're letting your channels be open. Do you have an altar set up for your ancestors?
No, I don't. No, I mean, you know, that's why I'm kind of just, you know, just kind of
do you
baby
have a,
steps
do you
right
have a
now,
space?
Just kind of learning about this.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, sorry.
Was someone going to say something?
No. You know, I mean, I have, you know, I'm kind of studying, you know, the metaphysical properties of crystals and healing like that already.
That's great.
Doing little steps right now, but, you know, it's kind of like a whole new world.
That's good. I'm glad you're getting into that. What kind of crystals or gemstones are you using right now?
Right now I have quartz. I have this it's like black obsidian. Some of the other ones I have. Tourmaline. I have a whole bunch of them, really. I'm just kind of collecting them right now, but, you know, studying their little properties and reading up on them. But I do have a lot of them.
So how do you think sorry to change the subject, but the marijuana, how do you think it does it make you increase those actions are you oppressing them while you're not, you know, taking marijuana? And then when you do take them, you're feeling more free? Is that how it works, or?
I feel like I'm just more tapped into my creative side. You know, certain things, sometimes I would just have this ability to just blurt out things that I'm not even thinking about. I've been doing a meditation and clearing my mind before. You know, I was, I'm coming back from like years of addiction of alcohol. So there's a lot of healing dealing with that, you know, first, you know, just getting off of that, you know, switching into this one, you know, is sort of a transitional process.
Okay.
No, but
do you have any more? Okay.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, the illegalization of marijuana has caused a lot of people to go down a spiritual path that's very bad for them. And that's what the American system is about. The globalization of American culture is really working double time now to put this veil over humanity because so many people are waking up. And so one of the things that people do is they quit smoking weed in order to get a corporate job. And, you know, it's the corporate jobs that can afford you the bigger house and the whatever materialistic stuff that people are taught that they need to be, you know, a standing American citizen. And so what that does is it attacks the inclinations of humanity, the human inclinations to live like the indigenous people did. And so, like you said, you using it actually, it can help you get over addictions to other things. You know, alcohol is legal, and alcohol causes way more death. No one has ever died from smoking weed.
No one has
ever died from smoking weed. I don't know how loud I can say that. Alcohol is causes a lot of deaths, whether it's through addiction or drunk driving or drunk mistakes. You know, alcohol has a lot of negative health benefits. Now, don't get me wrong. Alcohol is a very important aspect of voodoo ritual, but it's important to use alcohol for a spiritual purpose and make sure you're offering it that way. A lot of people stop using marijuana and lose their talent because marijuana will help them, you know, tap into their particular power. And just like you said, for the listeners, your use of it helps you tap into a spiritual aspect of a talent that you have. And people are losing their talent. And when people lose their talent, that's when you get And you go to college and you get told you got to get a corporate job, so you got to quit smoking and you got to cut your hair. Well, okay, the warriors in ancient Africa and Native America kept long hair because they knew your hair was your connection to your spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's why people, when they go into army, they have to cut their hair. That's why when you get a corporate job, you have to cut your hair. Or if you're a black woman, you got to make your hair like a, you got to oppress your hair and make it look like a white woman,
mm-hmm.
because that, that disconnects you from your ancestors.
Mm.
The more disconnected Americans are becoming from their ancestors, the easier Americans are to control. So you got people walking around with cut hair. You got people walking around drinking because they can't legally smoke weed. And
mm-hmm.
so they're becoming worse human beings, literally, because they're they're drinking or they're going to prescription drugs instead of using the plant that quite literally God gave humanity, that the ancestors gave humanity.
Right. And that's
I thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah. Okay. Caller, we'll have to let you go unless you have any more questions.
Okay.
We can get you in the chat room. And we'll get the other comments also in the chat room. So if you're in the chat room, we're going to get to your comments in a few minutes. We have about 7 minutes left. So real quick. So we had a great conversation about marijuana. That is wonderful. Awesome. I can't thank you enough for breaking that down, because we really need to get that out there to people. But what can we go back a little bit to spirits, if we just have a few more minutes, and the connection that herbs, how do you make the connection when you're doing a spiritual practice, you know, doing a ritual? How do you use the herbs in making that connection to the spirits or the ancestors? How do you do it, and how do you know that you're doing it? You know, if you're burning herbs in a cauldron, or if you are just, you know, making a tea, like, I don't, what do you do with the herbs, like, specifically?
Well,
with them?
In Vodou, in Vodou ritual, that is where my background in witchcraft came in handy a lot, because I was already able to, I had already been doing witchcraft rituals, and unbeknownst to me, the rituals that I was doing regularly had the same format. I just had to tweak a few things and invoke Oshun instead of a random energy. And so I was able to understand once I, was taken into the house and was introduced to a few more mysteries, I was able to understand things about myself and, why I was taken to Ocean's house. So one of the things I noticed is that, when I grew up, I would eat, I would put honey on my snacks. And I would eat cereal a lot. I would eat Haagen-Dazs ice cream bars a lot. And understanding Oshun's connection to sweetness and sensuality and that need for milk and that need for honey helped me know how to make honey, make honey water for her, how to use honey in rituals, how to... for example, I can give an example. If you want to do a cleansing, a basic cleansing, you spread salt around. That's one of the basic things in witchcraft. Well, the properties of salt are, that salt helps clean your blood, and it helps protect things, and it helps melt water, when we get snow and things like that.
Preservative.
So it's the same thing. When you spread, when you spread salt around your place, the same thing that salt does for your body, you can say that's doing for your place. It's banishing, it's taking away negative spirits, it's melting away anything that, is obstructing your spiritual energy. Something like mint. Mint is something that I love. Being in the house of Oshun, I was able to understand the Haitian goddess Erzuli. And, this is not something I was told, but, through working with Erzuli, I understood her appreciation for mint. Well, Erzuli is a virgin. She's also a fierce protector of women and everything, but there's a path of Erzuli that's a young virgin. And the mint is something that is used for freshness. And Erzuli being a virgin, she is of that freshness, that purity,
right.
That innocence.
And is cooling, mint, which is the opposite of being hot and bothered. Right.
Exactly. And it mint has that cool freshness. There you go.
Um,
uh,
I didn't thank the last caller. Marcus is reminding me. Sorry about that.
Oh, okay.
Segun, yes, Miss Segun Dent. Yeah, please post your website if you're still listening, and we're gonna play your song at the end of the show too. So, but thank you, and sorry I didn't mean to skip over you like that. But we're trying to get a lot of information in today, so go right ahead.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Another thing is in order to be able to understand, you know, what to invoke and everything, it depends on what type of energy you're invoking. You don't have to necessarily do a ritual if you don't know that yet.
Mm-hmm.
You can cook. You know, cooking is one of the most basic forms of witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
Saying a prayer, actually, is a form of witchcraft. Saying a prayer is petitioning a spirit,
yes,
to do something for you. You know, when you add witchcraft or ritual into it, you're creating a sacred space to do that. You're preparing an offering, and you're doing more formal. So cooking... for people, rosemary is an herb that I've used in a lot of banishing rituals, mm-hmm, and banishing spells. And rosemary has a good property of cleaning and banishing. It kind of serves the same purpose of, like, eucalyptus in a way, but it's like a lesser eucalyptus.
Mm-hmm.
And it has that a good flavor like basil does,
right,
too.
Mm-hmm.
And rosemary is something that I've used in a lot of my rituals, and I sprinkled it around the base of the candle, or I actually dress the candle, you know, with rosemary.
Okay.
Black pepper, which is an herb. Black pepper, actually, even we can talk about cayenne pepper and spicy pepper. Well, you know, that cleans your blood. That it makes you sweat. You know,
mm-hmm,
what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It gets the pain. Excellent things to use in banishing, because when you eat the pepper, you know, it cleans your body. It can cause a person to move their bowels,
mm-hmm,
and it can cause a person to sweat and get some of those impurities out. And that's why you want to use pepper in a ritual. So one way you can use it is you can dress a candle, you can sprinkle some of these things around an altar that you have or around your space and use it to invoke.
I love that connection, yeah, that connection you're making there. That is really vital, and people don't realize that. You know, they get, like, you know, they get so tied up and wrapped up in what they're doing, you know, but they're not thinking about why they're doing this or why, you know, why is this pepper important? Like, I heard somebody said that you can, you know, throw salt over your shoulder or all these little good luck things or little ritual things you hear from your grandmother or whoever. And you're not realizing, okay, wait a minute, that actually does make sense if I just think about it. And then when you make that connection in your own mind, it actually manifests itself, you know, if you do it. So thank you for making that connection. That's really, really vital.
Yeah, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
What about, so two things that I am personally very interested in are myrrh, frankincense and myrrh, but definitely myrrh, and how that is an ancient, well, you know, you hear about it a lot in ancient Kemetic use of people in that region, and how that smoke, if you're burning it, how it helps you connect with the spirits, and then of course essential oils and things like that, and lavender and all that, and then, but what about Osain? Now, I don't know if are you familiar with that spirit deity, Osain?
Yeah, and and Osain is he's like a divine healer,
okay,
and he knows the secrets of a lot of these herbs and everything.
Right.
And so, the one thing about myrrh and frankincense and myrrh, in mm-hmm, my experience, is that the thing about witchcraft and it's practical magic too,
mm-hmm,
and a lot of people don't do the practical aspect. They just focus on the magic aspect, and the practical aspect comes from the root word practice. A lot of people are reading and you know, listening to what other people say, but they're not setting up their altars and practicing it themselves. And
mm-hmm,
through practice is where you're actually going to learn what works and what doesn't.
Exactly.
So in my experience with frankincense and myrrh is great for invoking the older male spirits, particularly like Legbar, the Eshu spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it has a masculine freshness to it that's really good for deep ancestral communication.
Mm-hmm. It's very earthy smell.
Yeah, it is earthy. It's got that strong musk thing to it, you know. So you know, it's something that I would definitely consider in invoking. You know, I don't want to just say a male figure, but maybe something that has more of a masculine intention to
okay.
it,
mm-hmm.
or it's something that's great to use in a general spiritual devotion. Like if you're preparing dinner and you're making a spiritual dinner for your ancestors, and you got your altar set up to make offerings, frankincense and myrrh would be a great one to use to make offerings, because the ancestors, that's a good one to pass your offerings through. Anytime you do ritual and you're offering to your ancestors or to a spirit, it's great to pass the offering through smoke.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I always pass it through smoke. Some people who deal with some of the water spirits, maybe like the Mami Wada spirit, they work more with water instead of smoke. But in those rituals, you might not need smoke because you're dealing with the actual mermaid, you know, and, you know, fire that can cook a fish. So it's important for a person to actually be connected to the spirit that they're invoking, to know and understand that spirit, so you don't offend it when you invoke it, because some spirits do not like certain things. You know, but people are taught to use that thing to invoke them, but they might not actually like that.
So definitely the practice is important. That's what my last question was going to be. How do you know that it's real? You know, how do you know that you're doing what you need to do to invoke X, Y, or Z or ABC of your ancestors or whatever? How do you know you're doing it? How do you know that it's real? I know, you know, like you said, you can be embodied by the spirit or... But what if you're not at that level yet and you're just trying your best just to make that single connection or just tap in? How do you know that you're there, and how do you know if it's real? And, not what works, because different things work for different people, but, you know, how do you know that you're on the right path and that for? And try to relate it to herbs.
Okay, yeah. Well,
the herbal practice, at least.
Yes. Okay. Well, in terms of the use of herbs, it will be the energy. And for people who aren't advanced, they might not be able to know when they've successfully invoked something. But the energy will be different when you're using something for sympathetic magic. How do you know if a spell worked? Well, one, you have to be patient and see what result you got. Sometimes spells work, but people didn't get the result that they wanted, and they think it didn't work.
Right.
But really, the ancestors gave them what they needed.
Mm-hmm.
How I can answer that best by saying how I know. How I know is through the possession that I receive and through the blessings that I receive. I know because I practice, you know, and this is my lifestyle. This is not a hobby. This is not something I just got into. This is a lifestyle that I've been living and that I'm now coming out and you know, in order to help others with, because I know that I'm at a level where I can help other people with it.
Okay.
So you know through, you know, the same way a Christian knows that they're worshiping the true God, you know it through strengthening your own faith by doing the practice and living the lifestyle. You know through the possession and the messages you receive. Those who, you know, may not have experienced those things, I would more say, how do you know it's not real? And, you know, I would say if you're not, you know, It depends on what your intention is for becoming a spiritual person. You know what's real if you're real. If you're not a real individual, if you're not really connected to your ancestors, if you're not really seeking out your ancestors, if you're not really seeking out a spiritual, metaphysical power that is of a different realm or a different, you know, dimension, then you aren't real. So you know it's real if you're real, because it is there. It's to our disposal. But if you aren't real, if your intentions are real, and your heart is not real, your magic is not going to be real, and your magic is not going to manifest. and your ancestors are not going to manifest for you.
Right.
So
okay.
If you're real, it'll be real.
So thank you. Brother Marcus is going to chime in real quick on that.
Peace, sister. I just want to say thank you for taking the time out to come on Herbal Intellect and spread your wisdom. I just wanted to add to that, actually. I'm not sure if you knew, but I was... my name is Marcus Oluwa Kayode Aduke. I was initiated through the Yoruba system, Ifa. And just thank you for everything you're saying. I feel like, I'm in 100% agreement with you and everything. But I just wanted to add that, the reason for that, in my opinion, is that, we embody the creator. I mean, we can create, I can create a ritual just because of my intention. I mean, to me, a ritual is nothing more than an extension or, an exponential manifestation of my intent. That's all it is. I could create it. I was one of my sisters, actually. She was frustrated with not finding a parking spot whenever she went to the mall and wherever she went. And so she said, you know what? I'm gonna create a deity that called the parking lot genie that's gonna help me find a parking spot. Mm-hmm. And so, she drew it up. She got a doll and she made a shrine with some cars, little cars on it, micro machines on it, and pretty much she did rituals. She kept her shrine up to par and everything, and every time all she had to do was call out his name and bam, a parking spot would be there. So I mean, I just feel like we have the power to do whatever. I mean, it's just that we have these ancient 5, 6, 10,000 year old rituals that our great ancestors have done that the universe is familiar with, and it's just easier to do those rituals. It's easier to talk to those deities and those frequencies of the creator or those frequencies of thought that we have given names to carry out those, whatever our intention is. So I just wanted to step in there and say that. But thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Well, thanks for adding that. That's really important. Yeah. And I like that, witchcraft and spirituality is a language that the universe understands, no matter what it is. And so if you're literate in that language, then speak that language to the universe.
Right. And there's nothing to be... Nothing to be afraid of. It's just another language, right? Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah. All right. And for those people who are struggling with their fear, talk to the ancestors. Stop looking for people to pay, and stop looking for a white person to confirm, and stop looking for something to mimic Christianity, and really make the sacrifice of your fear and go ahead and talk to the ancestors and let them guide you. Don't go to no middleman.
Right.
Let the ancestors show you what person to go to.
Okay, great. Let's see. We have a few more minutes in here. If you have time, correct or no? Do you have any more time?
Me?
Yes, Cassidy.
Oh yeah, I'm good.
Oh okay, good. All right. Well, we'll continue on here. Let's see. They're in the chat room. Someone posted. A documentary, a truly must-see, The Century of Self, The Power of Propaganda. Okay, but we'll have to check that out. Thank you, True Black. Definitely have to check that out. So we're still waiting for Mr. Segun's music, if he wants to bring that on, and we'll show broadcast that. Let's see if there's anything else in the chat room. Notice that the ancestors use herbs. I don't think we found it. Was for a purpose in the proper time. The commercialism and propaganda is what caused us to get off our path. Yes, definitely. They don't want us to be back on that same path. They want us to get off of that path, definitely. So what about any resources? I mean, we're kind of coming to a close here. What about some resources that you have personally, your own personal business, or, any books or websites or anything like that you want to share with the listening audience?
Oh, that's crazy, because I was just going to say something. This goes right along with that. Uh-huh. This is going to sound crazy, but the first resource I have is the Bible.
Okay.
And that's because the Bible, although in 325 CE, the Council of Nicaea came and corrupted the Bible for the purpose of enslaving people.
Yes.
But before that, the Bible had was full of African proverbs, African spirituality. And another thing the Council of Nicaea did was it took away all the feminine principles of the Bible, and it oppressed women.
Mm.
So for people who understand that Rastafari are those who practiced the Old Testament of the Bible, where the African Proverbs taught about burnt offerings and taught the importance of keeping your crown and taught the importance of staying away from lepers and people, you know, who have recessive genetics and people who weren't holy, not eating swine, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible, especially the Old Testament, is a good source to, you know, to go back and look at what it says about burnt offerings and the things that they were doing. Because the New Testament is the one that, you know, again, you know, somewhat corrupted, but advises against those things. But in the Old Testament, it talked about witchcraft. It talked about burnt offerings. It talked about the rituals that were used. Another source I have for those who want to get into witchcraft and try and do some practical magic and learn how I started learning when I was younger, Silver Raven Wolf. She's a great author, and she has some practice. Yeah, Silver Raven Wolf. And the first book I would recommend is Teen Witch, Wicca for a New Generation. And I recommend that book because she specifically wrote that book for teenagers who were getting into witchcraft and who needed help dealing with their parents.
Mm-hmm.
Who were, you know, were not of the craft. And that book, actually, to this day, that's one of the only books that I've read on witchcraft. The only other one I've read, which I didn't finish, is Nocturnal Witchcraft. So I'm saying that to say that you don't have to read a library. If you're a witch or if you're meant to practice, practice.
Mm-hmm.
But find one good book, find one or two good books that can get you on your way and start practicing. And once you practice, and Silver Raven Wolf has some good lessons and tests and things that you can do, so to speak, as a solitary witch to learn how to develop your potential where you can start doing your own spells and doing magic, but, you know, without having to, you know, read or have the book there with you.
Mm-hmm.
She also has some good ways to correlate the properties of herbs and household things. So, you know, so witchcraft doesn't get expensive for people. It helps people learn what is in their house already that they can use, and not just edible things. Pens, markers, you know, just anything that is in your house that you can enchant and use for ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought there was another website I wanted to use. No, I think I posted some of the website web pages there already.
Okay, on the Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's, yeah, definitely Silver Raven Wolf for witchcraft. And in terms of Bodhu, like I said, I don't recommend any book to anyone at this time. I recommend that people light some incense, light a candle, ask the ancestors, and listen, and then. You know, start researching, because there's a lot of false information out there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you start researching about Bodhu, make sure the ancestors are guiding you to the information that you need to know, because there's a lot of false information and a lot of whitewashing of the Orishas and confusing black people into thinking that Bodhu is another thing that you have to go through a middleman or through a white person to access.
I've actually experienced
that, where people who were white, you know, or, you know, posing, you know, people who were posing as Hispanic or whatever, were offended that me and my partner were practicing Bodhu. But I think they, you know, because they were under the impression that, you know, they never saw dark skinned black people in America
practicing,
doing their own thing.
Right.
And black people we need to understand that this is our religion. And just because someone is lighter skinned than you, or just because someone says that they're initiated, these are your ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
And white people will do that. They will try and convince you that you're less than holy and you have to go through them.
Right.
No, you don't.
Especially
the black people.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about ancestors, these are not people that you don't know. I mean, sometimes when you hear the word ancestors, you know, just think of someone, you know, hundreds of years ago that you had no idea, you know, anything about them. These could be people that have passed on to the next, you know, into that realm, you know, last year or the year before, or, you know, when you were a child. I mean, these are people that you probably have grown up with. You can still contact them and be in touch with them. Don't be afraid of that. You know, people, you know, it's not, you know, it is those people that passed, you know, into that realm hundreds of years ago as well. But these are people that the more, you know, the closer they were to you in your physical life, that is makes it easier for you to contact them. So, you know, don't think that this is something that, you know, you're making up, and it's real people that actually, that you knew and are familiar with, and you can still contact them. So don't be scared to do that. so anyway, Marcus had one thing about the...
Can I add just one thing really
okay.
quick? I do want to mention that ancestral reverence is a form of African spirituality that you don't have to be African or of that bloodline to do.
Mm-hmm.
You can practice African spirituality as a non-African person by revering your ancestors, by doing ceremonies for your dead relatives,
mm-hmm.
you know, and perform those things. That's an African spirituality that anyone can practice mm-hmm. and revere. When it comes to actually learning the mysteries of Vodou and learning the esoteric practices of Vodou that people must earn the rights to do, that's when you're getting into genetic bloodlines that if you're not of that bloodline, you're not going to be led into the mysteries.
Okay.
And so it's these mysteries that people are claiming that they don't have. And it's the mysteries that allow a person to initiate somebody else. So a Caucasian person can practice African spirituality through revering their own ancestors or through celebrating the powers of the African ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not someone who can initiate a black person into the Vodou, spiritual aspects of it. The religious ceremony aspects anyone can do, but the mysteries are preserved for those chosen and those who have earned those rights.
Mm-hmm. Great. Wow, wonderful. Okay, well, I guess we're going to wrap up. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Alafia, hand clap.
I can't thank you enough, too, and I hope you guys have me back on some of the stuff. I really do appreciate this. It was really a blessing, and it came right on time.
Oh, wonderful, yes. And we definitely will have you back on because there's so much more to talk about, and I'm glad we were able to go over and continue and not rush through everything. But we want to have you on again to continue this conversation because it's much needed for everybody. It's not just for people who are on a spiritual journey. It's for everybody's benefit, and really appreciate that you can be part of this conversation with us. So we're gonna play some music from Mr. Dent. Segun, Mr. Dent. We're gonna play your song there that was requested. So thank you all for listening to Nubia Hood Radio, Herbal Intellect Show, and I really appreciate Miss Chastity for being on today. Stay tuned for this.
And check out my website, Black High Priestess at Wix.com.
Yes, 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 definitely. Black High Priestess at Wix.com. We'll post that up on the chat room too. Oh, there he is. Okay. And just so check out the rest of the week's shows. On Tuesday, audiobook with Brother Marcus. Wednesday, Not for Hire with J.O. Sesenya. And Friday, we have Brother Phil coming on with a special guest for Miss Nalani Valentine. Dr. Nalani Valentine, excuse me. She's going to talk about her seven Steps to Wellness book. And so stay tuned for all the wonderful shows, and we will see you next week on Herbal Intellect, same time on Nubia Hood Radio. Peace, everybody.
Ashe.
That's the song?
Yeah, that's the song.